Welcome to Women with Issues, where we talk about policy issues that matter to women. We're beginning our podcast with a series focused on the issues most important to women over 50, with the goal of helping us make a more informed vote in the 2020 presidential election.
It's important to remember that this is an open forum focusing on policy issues more than on politics. So we are nonpartisan, bipartisan, and we're just here to inform, to educate, discuss, and to get you to engage.
That's right, Tracy. I am Diane Kulivers, and I'm here with my potting partner, Tracy Maxwell Hurd. Did you like that?
Never been called a potting partner. Okay.
Get used to it, sister.
So, tell you a little bit about me. My professional life has been pretty convoluted, but kind of began with a degree in communications, followed by a stop in corporate management. I'm a card-carrying member of the UAW, was once a news anchor, nonprofit executive director, did 8 years in the Ohio legislature, and now I'm lobbying. And yes, I do have a husband, one married man, no kids.
Okay. I think my background's going to be shorter, although we're the same age, so explain that.
You have kids.
My education is in journalism and nonprofit administration. In fact, I met Tracy Maxwell Hurd here in undergrad, didn't we?
Moons and moons ago.
Yes. We were both studying journalism at the time. I then became a freelance writer for newspapers and magazines and a variety of other jobs, just enough to make me a little spicy. I became a foster parent and adopted three wonderful boys out of the foster care system and spent several years raising those, my three little monsters. I'm married and I now work as a grant writer for nonprofit organizations.
Cool beans. So that's who we are. Welcome to Women with Issues. And now we just kind of want to share with you a little bit about how this process came to be and what our initial focus is going to be. It's something that Diane and I have talked about doing for a number of years. And she came across an article that really kind of helped us hone in our focus and the target audience that we wanted to address, which really is our peers, all of the women out there like us that are over 50. And Diane, tell them a little bit about the article you found.
Yeah, I was on Facebook one day, and a Facebook friend had posted an article from AARP magazine that said that women over 50 could decide the next presidential election.
Excited.
And it did. It excited me because, you know, meant I had a lot of power. And who doesn't like power, Tracy?
I love power.
So I looked at read the article and you know, it was pretty interesting. It said that 95% of women over 50 said that they plan to vote in the next election. Actually, this is a poll conducted by AARP magazine. But 95% of women over 50 will vote in the next election. That is a huge number. The article is written by Dina Bunis, December 18th of 2019. So
that's a big number. Predicting 95% of women over 50 will engage. And my husband works for the Board of Elections. So when you look at the election cycles over and over again, even in presidential, that's the thing we're always struggling with, is getting people to actually engage, to show up and vote. 95% is unprecedented anywhere, anytime.
Wow. So that means that, you know, there's a reason why women over 50, you know, plan to get out there and vote. Now, you know, 95% of us. So why are they voting in such huge numbers?
Well, I think this has been an unprecedented presidential administrative cycle, regardless of which side of the aisle you're on. We've had a lot of things happening that haven't happened in a long time or have never happened before. The advantage that we have going into the 2020 election is They're predicting 95% of our peer group are going to be voting. But at this point, we're still looking at 7 out of 10 women undecided as to who they want to vote for.
That's interesting, isn't it?
There's a lot of options out there.
They know they're going to vote, but it's important to them. 70% still don't know how they'll vote.
Exactly.
So, I think before we get into the meat of the issues that they're saying that women are holding, you know, most important with regard to this poll, the divisiveness in the country is just scary. I don't know if we've seen anything like this. I mean, I think you and I at our age don't really remember the 60s. I mean, I do kind of remember the Vietnam War was going on when I was pretty young. I remember that people were protesting.
Right.
There was a lot of divisiveness in the country over that. And, you know, I guess you look back to the Civil War, but since then, I've just not really seen this in my lifetime.
And it feels that way. And, you know, I said that to a friend not long ago who works for a think tank, and he said, well, actually, we've always had divisiveness. You know, he started referring to these pamphlets that used to go around in the 1800s and how they would attack each other. And so I guess this has always been kind of part of the process. But for some reason, it does feel new. It does feel different. And I think it's because we're resurrecting a lot of issues that we kind of thought we'd already addressed. And it's pulling us apart on things that we had put to bed, that we'd already resolved. And, you know, lots of issues around women's rights, or lots of race issues, things that we thought we had resolved as a country that are now coming out again. And it's pulling us apart. It's not bringing us together. We're not saying, oh, yeah, we dealt with that. Let's move on. Mm. We're rehashing it over again. And it's opening old wounds.
It is. And just among, you know, people I know, I mean, we have atrocities like people unfriending people on Facebook,
right,
for God's sake.
Right.
You know, but seriously, you know, I remember around the holidays, people saying I dreading getting together with my family members.
That was a big thing.
This year, because, you know, we're going to sit around the dinner table and we got to watch
each other,
each other, or watch what we say. And people really just, you know, splitting up over this. So,
well, the opportunity that we have here
getting ugly.
Is to educate ourselves, to make sure that we know what the issues are so that we're not emotional voters. You know, that's one of the things that women always get accused of, as being emotional around things that we should be logical and pragmatic around. Certainly, our next presidential election is one of those. But one thing to remember is this isn't just a presidential election. So the things that are being decided and the things that we're going to be talking about are things that the next president would have some say over. And but it's also, where does the next, you know, Congress weigh into this? Who are those people going to be? Who are some of the local electeds that are going to come up on the ballot as well? And remembering to vote all the way down, you know, that ballot, because it often gets kind of muddied when there's a presidential election at the top. People are so focused on that, they vote there and check out. But the things that really impact your daily lives and how those decisions that are made by the president and by our sitting Congress are implemented by those other elected officials that are further down the ballot, how that money gets spent, what programs it goes into.
That's a good point. I think, you know, everybody thinks it's all about the president. And yeah, you're right. We got to look at all of those. I think, you know, what I would really like is just for people to listen to our podcast with an open mind.
For sure.
As we, you know, as journalists, try to present both sides of each issue that we're taking a look at, and to be tolerant, you know.
Absolutely.
This divisiveness isn't going to heal unless people are tolerant.
And to have full conversations. That's one of the things that we really are going to focus on, is making sure that we're giving you information on both sides. With us being journalism majors, when we were in school, it was all about the facts, and you had to have three sources for your facts. And things have evolved in the media to be as divisive as the landscape is. You know, we have MSNBC, we have Fox, so we're not really required to listen to anybody else. Well, we're going to bring everyone to the table, both sides every conversation that we're having, so that we really are having a full conversation, because that's the only way we can educate ourselves, is to make sure we hear what the other side is saying, consider it, and see how that really plays out in the decisions that we want to make around these issues that we say are important to us.
Right. And I think, you know, no matter who's in the White House or who gets, you know, into these elected positions, there's a reason why people want them there. There's a reason that people put them there, and to just shut them out and, you know, not listen to, you know, why they voted the way they did, it doesn't help.
Yeah, and educated voters are powerful voters.
That's right.
And we're about to be the most powerful demographic in this cycle coming up. So Let's talk about some of the issues that the poll said we said are important to us.
Okay. Well, you know, there's a line in this, in the article addressing this AARP poll that says that it used to be, the old adage was, it's the economy, stupid, but now apparently it's healthcare, stupid.
Exactly. Healthcare seems to be one of the biggest topics that's really resonating with this demographic, and it makes sense. Because we're the caregivers, you know, whether it's our children, ourselves, our spouses, or even our parents. We are making the decision in large part, and we're the ones that are bearing the brunt of a lot of the expense for this as well.
Well, I know that's true in my household. You know, I'm the one that tells my husband, hey, you know, you've been complaining about that shoulder for 3 months. Mm-hmm. Go to the doctor.
Exactly. Making sure they get their physicals, all of that.
Right.
But some of the reasons that the women said healthcare was such a big topic to them, why this was so important, 26% said that they skipped having healthcare altogether because it was too expensive. That's a crazy number and incredibly dangerous, because what we find out is when you don't have healthcare, at some point you're forced to deal with your issues anyway. You just end up going in the system through the emergency room versus through your primary, you know, care physician, you know, when you first start to have symptoms and issues. 14% of women said that they incurred a great deal of debt because of healthcare issues.
Mm-hmm.
7 in 10 said that the older citizens pay too much compared to younger people for healthcare. And then, of course, there's the pre-existing condition argument that everyone's going back and forth over. 85% say that pre-existing conditions shouldn't cost more.
Well, that's right. And so you're looking at, you know, should you spread the cost out over all of the, you know, age demographic, or should older people pay more because they have more health problems?
Or should sick people pay more? And
right.
That was part of the big conversation during the ACA when that was all being developed, better known as Obamacare. But what the insurance providers, and what everyone has demonstrated, insurance providers don't like it, but they had to concede the point, is that when you have everyone in the same pool, the cost is lower for everyone.
Right.
Versus pulling out those who are sickest or those who are elderly. That's the whole point of having insurance, is spreading the pain across the entire population. Then everybody pays less. And at some point, we all fall into those demographics. You know, I mean, there are very few people who go through their life and don't suffer some kind of illness or, you know, health setback. And God willing, we're all going to get old or you're going to be dead. So some of the other issues that they had listed as in terms of being priority among health or under healthcare, 65% said that they were down on pharma. 46% said that they just gave a failing grade across the board in terms of healthcare and the high cost, including prescriptions, circling back around to pharma. And then the last thing was 65% said that they manage everyone's care in the house. And that's kind of where we started out. You know,
right.
Why this is so important, why healthcare is such a big issue to women, is because 65% of us feel like we're carrying and the responsibility for everyone in our family, from children all the way up to parents.
Sure. Well, you know, we're nurturers.
That's our natural role.
That's our natural role.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, and these figures all, by the way, that we're giving all are referring to this poll of just women over 50 in this poll.
Just as a heads up, our next podcast is going to be focused strictly on healthcare, And we're going to have a special guest with us, Sandra Moody, who is a healthcare insurance provider, and she is the incoming president of the Ohio Association of Insurance Underwriters, Healthcare Underwriters, and has had her own business for well over 30 years. Not sure exactly. I don't have her bio in front of me. But she will be really helpful in not only answering our questions, but helping us focus in on things that we don't know we don't know. And things that we should be considering, because, you know, insurance is a big conversation, and you think you know.
It's huge. I'm getting my questions ready. I have a lot of questions for her, because there isn't anything more complicated than healthcare.
Absolutely.
You know, it's just, I have health insurance, you know, I get these statements in the mail, and it takes me half a day to figure out, you know, what I owe, what the insurance company is paying, what they're charging me for.
If
I've been overcharged, you know, and then trying to get someone on the phone to ask a question that's another headache.
Yeah. And what happens to the people who aren't that persistent or don't know how to navigate those things, don't have advocates to take care of that of thing for them? And there are people to stand in the gap and do that kind of thing. So again, back to the education and information part of this podcast is not just asking questions, but making sure that we're providing resources and helping direct you to things that will help you deal with these issues that we're all facing and are so paramount in our lives. So, healthcare trumped economy this time.
That's right.
But economy was still, no pun intended.
Good one, Tracy.
But no, economy is still a big issue among women. And for probably a lot of different issues than men, because we have a lot of challenges that we face that men aren't facing. 48% of women said that they do believe that the economy is on the wrong track. One of the things that they mentioned in terms of challenges was college affordability, because, you know, women in their 50s are dealing with kids who are still in college, you know, trying to finish college, going into grad school, you know, doing all which is, you know, generally we're providing, you know, we're writing the checks for those kinds of things. And as tuition continues to go up and up, and then we're putting out a generation of kids who have debt. And guess what happens? They come back home. And you have, being a mother who has kids who've gone through this in a number of different incarnations, you've got a son in the military, you know, son in college, all of that. I mean, how does that play out for you in real time?
Well, you know, some are suggesting that we have free college education, or that we have free community college education. And you know, as a parent, I have three sons in their 20s. I like that idea.
For sure.
I also went through a divorce when my kids were in their mid to late teens. And that was right before it was time to pay for college, which made it even more difficult. So, that is a huge issue for me.
And we're going to bring somebody in to talk about that as well, because this is not an issue that is just one state. This is all across the country, and different people are dealing with it differently, because different states have different options for their students. You know, some states you can go to college for free if you're a resident, you know, big advantage there.
Yeah.
Not true in Ohio. So, you know, what are the options that we have? What are some of the things that are on the table right now that are looking at changing, you know, through the current administration, some of the things that they're looking at taking off the table that will help or hinder kids as they're getting ready to go into college? So that'll be another separate podcast as well. But the economy issue in general, you know, I mean, there are a lot of issues that are just specific to us. You know, you had kids. How does childcare pay and, you know, play into this in terms of the cost of that and, you know, women working?
Well, childcare at the time was not an issue for me. I had the good fortune of being, you know, able to be a stay-at-home mom.
Right.
So I was very lucky. I mean, I still did need care. I needed after school. I mean, I had three sons who came from foster care who had some special needs. Mm-hmm. And some special issues, and I did need help with that. Their whole set of other issues that I had to deal with, you know, birth parents, visits, just the, you know, hoops that you have to jump through being a foster parent with working with the child care.
An adoptive parent, right.
Child protective services and such.
Well, I know one of the things that happened when I was in the house, one of our staffers actually quit because she said it didn't make sense because she was just working to pay for childcare.
Yeah.
So it just made more sense for her to just stay home and take care of her children herself because her entire check was just going to pay for the daycare for their kids.
Right. Well, and then I found myself, you know, after 18 years of raising children, trying to get back into the job market.
Right.
Oh my gosh. You know, it was really hard. I ended up just working for myself, you know, it also happened to be around the time of the Great Recession, mm-hmm. 2008, 2009. So that didn't help either. But it was very difficult. You know, it was really hard.
And that's a challenge specific to us because, you know, even though we have stay-at-home dads, that's still an extreme minority. And I would be interested to know how they do when they're trying to get back into the job market. You know, do they have the same challenges? Are they perceived the same way? Because, you know, we know that we have pay equity gaps, you know, for women doing the same job as women. There's discrimination around our appearance, not just, you know, do we look older, but, you know, are you overweight? Are you considered attractive? All of those kinds of things play into considerations around employment with us that men don't have to face. Something else around women in the workplace. I'm engaged in a board called WELD, Women for Economic Leadership and Development, and we're going to have Barb Smoot, who is the national CEO, come and talk to us about some of those challenges as well. But one of the things that that organization deals with specifically and tracks is how many women are serving on corporate boards and what that means to a company's culture and what that means to women moving up through the C-suite and pay equity and how all of those issues are impacted by whether there are or aren't women on that company's board and or what the percentage of women are on that board. And because that's something that has been a disadvantage for us for decades and really has just become a big conversation and a lot of focus with several organizations really pushing that and helping women prepare for that. So lots of issues around the economy and the workforce that, or the workplace that women deal with that men don't have to.
That's right. You know, I want to just circle back for a second to, you know, the child raising issue and with women our age, what's probably more of an issue now is there are tens of thousands of grandparents raising grandchildren right now.
Absolutely.
You know, it's been that way for a while, but more recently because of the heroin and opioid epidemic. Okay. I was on the board of the Ohio Family Care Association, which is Ohio's statewide adoptive and foster parent association. And, you know, we represented foster, adoptive, kinship, and primary parents, kinship being mostly grandparents raising their grandchildren. And it... Mm-hmm. You know, it's very difficult when you're trying to move into your retirement years and suddenly, you know, I've met people that have five grandchildren they're trying to raise.
Sure.
And they don't have access to the, you know, like myself as a foster parent, you know, you get a subsidy every month that comes from the state to help with room and board for the kids that you take in. They don't get that.
Exactly. That was one of the things, kinship care,
they're
that we
using
dealt
their
with.
Retirement money.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and all financial experts tell you, you know, take care of your retirement even before you take care of your kids' college. So now you're talking about you're having grandchildren coming back onto the scene or coming onto the scene here. So when you are getting ready to transition out into that, and kinship care was a really big conversation in terms of those financial resources and why they were not eligible for those and what we could do as a legislature to change that. Because they were doing the same thing and often with greater success because there was a family bond there. There wasn't that this is, you know, trying to develop that bond and that relationship because you're going to someone who you didn't know before. You know, you're going to grandma's house where you've, you know, been 1,000 times.
Right, right. So they're, you know, the children are better off with kin, obviously.
Sure.
But, you know, maybe grandparents that have to turn them away. Right. I can't do it because I don't have the resource. I don't have the financial resources. So, you know, the children are the ones that suffer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, last thing I think that was a big focus of this poll was what women think about or what's important to them when they're considering candidates and elected officials. And one of the areas where it said we were falling down or they were falling down was in terms of ethics. 39% said ethics were a big deal, 36% said trust was a big deal, and 30% said intelligence was a big deal. So, you know, what we think of, how we perceive them, how much confidence we have in these people who are, you know, stepping into this political arena makes a big difference. So, you know, as these candidates are out and having debates and encountering the electorate at town halls and a number of different organizations, what impression are they making? You know, because one of the things that they say, you have to like a person to vote for them.
Is that right? I think you do. I think I have to.
Yeah. I mean, you don't, I don't think you can hate a person and vote for them. You know, you're looking for a certain level of confidence. You're looking for them to be intelligent. You're looking for them to be competent. You want to feel assured that they can do the job.
But you know what happened in the last election? A lot of people said they chose the better of two evils. I can't tell you how many people said that. So I guess you can hate someone and vote for them, but just not hate them as much as
you hate
the other
guy. Exactly. Well, I think we've got a lot that we've put on the table. Lots of conversations that are going to come up down the line that, you know, just organically as we're having different guests and exploring these subjects. This is going to be the main driver for now in the next few months until we get to the presidential election. But we will certainly continue beyond then because all issues are women's issues. So there's really nothing that we can't talk about. And certainly our demographic is right now center stage in terms of handling the business of the country, of our families, of the environments that we work in as we get ready to step off the stage and, you know, hand it to the next one. But right now we are center stage and they're saying this one is going to really be about how we engage in this election.
Yes. Well, it'll be definitely won't be boring, Tracy.
Hopefully not. And we're going to try to present experts and great thought leaders in these areas to really stimulate the conversation and make sure that you're getting the best and most comprehensive information on all the topics that we're talking about, and make sure that you have what you need to make informed decisions. So we're encouraging you to engage locally, make sure that you know what's happening, not just in the presidential, but in your community as well.
So please subscribe to our podcast and
Absolutely. Tell
your friends about us. The more listeners we have, you know, the better guests we can get, you know, the better we can present, you know, great information for you.
And we're going to make it as fun and entertaining as we possibly can. So let's remember, ladies, we have the opportunity to create the agenda and make these candidates respond to our issues. And as Diane said at the top, we're in a really powerful position right now. And who doesn't love a little bit of power?
Right.
Question is, what are we going to do with it?
That's right. We are Women with Issues. We'll see you next time.
We're talking to you.